A new TV series on the Discovery Channel shows how the FBI used the Unabomber's own words to track him down. The drama follows a manhunt for Ted Kaczynski, whose crimes span from 1978 to 1995.
For 17 years, he's been planting and mailing bombs. 16 bombs, 3 people killed, dozens injured. And we really have no friggin' clue who he is or why he's doing this. And we call him the Unabomber because his early targets were universities and airlines. UN for university, A for airline, Unabomb.
Manhunt Unabomber stars actor Sam Worthington as James R. Fitzgerald, the FBI profiler who helped crack the Unabomber case. And James Fitzgerald joins us now. Welcome.
Hi, Magna. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Now, you're a consulting producer on this show, and you did see the scripts beforehand, but you've been actually watching the final product along with the rest of us for the first time as the episodes aired. So what do you think of it so far?
Oh, without a doubt, I'm very impressed with the production value, the acting, and the writing. A few surprises in there for me, a few changes from the scripts that I read. But on the whole, I think it's telling a very interesting story of a very interesting case and a set of characters involved, you know, specifically the Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski. So I think that a lot of the public's learning for the first time what this guy was all about and what made him tick, at least a little bit, and they certainly will by the end of the series.
So tell us, I mean, you were involved with the case for quite a period of time. For people who don't know, what was your involvement?
I came in July of 95. The investigation had already gone on 17 years. There was a Unabomb Task Force, UTF for short, and I was a seasoned FBI agent, 7 years in New York City. But as a brand new profiler, after 12 weeks of training at Quantico, I was asked, which in the FBI kind of means you're being told, if I would go to San Francisco and work on this case for 30 days. A year and a half later, I was still there, went back and forth a little bit, but we eventually did solve the case as a team, and I was glad to be a big part of it.
So let's talk a little bit about the criminal profiling part, right? Because I think that's one of those things that in the mass media, you know, it's so often used in dramas, like there's a federal criminal profiler and they're going to crack the case. I mean, does it really work that way? I mean, how does it work in a case like Ted Kaczynski?
I've said this before, but it's basically you're taking all the possible suspects in the country, pouring them into sort of a metaphorical funnel, and out at the very bottom should come a very basic set of demographic and personal attributes or traits. It's never a name or an address, but hopefully it's something that can they can at least narrow the suspect pool and focus on certain kinds of people. And when I came in, there were already about 5 different profiles written. Then it was my job to get involved more in that. But then I also sort of morphed into my earliest days of being a forensic linguist. And I wasn't even familiar with that term back then, but that's actually what I wound up doing.
Well, so I want to ask you about that. So when we say forensic linguistics, what does that mean? And how did you use that in the Unabomber case?
Well, I didn't use that term back then. They're using it a little bit in the series. It's one of the few things where they go a little bit off kilter in terms of what really happened or what language was used there. But in terms of the language analysis components of the series, what the viewers are seeing, it's pretty much right on. I picked up a few things that nobody had noticed before in some of the letters, including the 1985 letter to a Dr. McConnell at the University of Michigan. It was a ruse letter to open up a device, you know, and which it did in fact explode. Down the left-hand column was certain letters, and the beginning of each paragraph spelled out the words, "Dad, it is I."
Was it a message that Kaczynski had encoded into the letter?
Well, we found other codes in the manifesto as well as in letters that he wrote. Not so much columnar, you know, vertical coding like this, but sort of contraindicators designed to point the investigation away from who he really was. And the Unabomber was a wordsmith. He made virtually no mistakes in his 35,000-word manifesto, which he never called it a manifesto, by the way. He referred to it as an article.
So we should talk about the manifesto a little bit more, because I think for those people who do remember this case, that was one of the defining features of it, which I believe he demanded be published in the New York Times, right?
Yes, he offered a bargain to the New York Times, and the Washington Post was also allowed to publish it.
Yeah.
If, in fact, you do publish this in whole, in its entirety, in so many words, I will cease and desist from bombing for purposes of killing people in the future. I argued this guy, he seemed to be serious about wanting to maintain his reputation, not just some lonely nut. And that if he's going to make an offer like this, it's probably something we should take him to for his word on, because it may save lives. But equally as important, someone is going to recognize this guy's distinctive, idiosyncratic, almost unique in some way, writing style that that he was utilizing in this manifesto and his earlier letters. It took a few months, but finally we got that phone call from the case started building from there.
It was the phone call from his brother.
It was, and actually his brother's attorney, and it took a few months to do this. And but just like I've told, seasoned investigators over the years have come up to me, well, the brother turned him in, so that made the job easy, right? I said, seriously, have you ever worked a homicide or serial rape or even bank robbery case, and someone calls and said, hey, Joe Smith on Fifth Avenue is the one that did the – you can't just go out and arrest somebody. You need to build your case.
So we've got a clip from the first episode that sort of has to do with the manifesto. And in it, you'll hear Sam Worthington, who plays you, speaking to a colleague, and you're talking about the manifesto and the need to throw out everything investigators thought they knew about it and just start over. So let's listen.
Would you talk down on people with advanced degrees? Is he actually low IQ with no higher education, or is he really smart, maybe has a bunch of degrees and knows we're going to read this letter and is hoping that we don't think too hard about it?
Wow. Yeah. I don't know.
Exactly. We don't know.
You know, it's been, what, 21 years plus? I mean, looking back at the case and the way that you had to work it, I'm wondering, how has it stayed with you? Did it change you in your approach to law enforcement and investigations?
It really did. I never called myself a linguist, but I am a forensic linguist now. And really the techniques that I first utilized, at least in my career, and only a few other folks out there were even looking into it back in the mid-90s. But nowadays it's a recognized subscience of or subfield of linguistics. And it's now I've testified at least a dozen times in U.S. courts, opinions I have about different cases. And there's some bad guys in prison, in part because of my testimony and other another evidence, of course, which pointed towards them.
Yeah. So, cases like this are so complex, they're so detailed, there's so many people involved that it's impossible to distill all of that down into a dramatization, right? So is there anything that the series doesn't quite get right?
Well, that's a very good question, Meghna. And there were 100 agents at any time that were and support personnel, analysts who were working this case. There was a lot of false leads followed, a lot of red herrings. I mean, but we had to go that direction. There's a lot of frustration in cases like this. And I'll be frank with you and your listeners. My character, the Fitz character, is a composite character. He didn't do everything illustrated on the miniseries itself. And as I told other folks, there was no one-on-one interaction with Ted Kaczynski and Fitz. That's come from the imagination of the writers. But I was supposed to interview Kaczynski 10 years after his arrest in 2007, actually 11 years. And I had all these questions written out. I was 30 miles away from his prison when his correctional officer called and canceled the interview on me. And I sort of related that information to these writers and my questions I would have had for him. And they put that whole thing together and made these sort of fictional scenes between the Fitz character and the Kaczynski character. So I think it's well done, and it helps express both people's sort of insecurities and angst and where they wanted the case to go and where they wanted their own lives to go.
So what would you have asked him if really it had been you sitting down across from him?
Well, I would have certainly tried to build rapport with him first and then see where it goes from there. And obviously at some point the goal would be, well, can we go back into your youth and why do you think you did this? Why do you think you did that? Why this victim? Why that victim? And see how it would come out.
Well, James R. Fitzgerald is the former FBI profiler who helped catch the Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski. He's one of the focuses of a new miniseries on the Discovery Channel called Manhunt Unabomber. The latest episode airs tonight. Mr. Fitzgerald, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Meghna. Take care.